Have your Bibles open to the book of John right now in the New Testament, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, and we're going to be in chapter 13. Notice here in John chapter 13, beginning in verse 1. Now before the feast of the Passover, Jesus, knowing that his hour had come that he should depart out of this world to the Father, having loved his own who were in the world, he loved them to the end. And during the supper, the devil, having already put into the heart of Judas Iscariot, the son of Simon, to betray him, Jesus, knowing that the Father had given all things into his hands, and that he had come forth from God and was going back to God, rose up from the supper and laid aside his garments. And he took a towel and he girded himself about. Then he poured water into the basin and began to wash the disciples' feet and to wipe them with the towel with which he was girded. And we'll get to his words here in this scene in just a few minutes. But for the time being, I want to look at the contrast between Jesus and Judas in this passage. You notice here that as Jesus is pondering the mission that he's been given by God, that he's considering the timing of all things, and that his death is at hand, even in the midst of that, knowing that suffering is about to come upon him, his main concern is still loving the Father and loving his disciples to the end. Contrasted so starkly with that is the attitude of Judas Iscariot, a man who has spent the last several years following Jesus about the countryside, witnessing and performing miracles, listening to teaching the likes of which mankind had never heard up to that point. And here he is pondering his escape strategy from the room in order to betray Jesus. Two people who could not be any different. And I wonder though, how could Judas have gone through with this plan? As Jesus is washing Judas' feet, because it was all the disciples, right? It wasn't just Peter so memorably having his feet washed, it was Judas as well. It was all of the disciples were there. They had enjoyed the Passover meal, and now Judas has to look down at his master, his teacher, and what I certainly hope was his friend after all that they'd been through, washing his feet all the while, tinkering around in his mind, what excuse am I going to offer to get out of this room right now and go find the people who want Jesus dead? How could Judas have gone through with that? Of course, the first point that we need to make is that we might not have done a whole lot better than Judas. Even though the other disciples didn't betray Jesus in the same way that Judas did, even though they did not lead him into a trap of sorts to have his life given over to the chief priests and those who hated him, it wasn't that much farther along in the story that all of the disciples ended up abandoning Jesus too. Judas might have actively sought an opportunity to betray Jesus, but all the other disciples betrayed his friendship by running away when things got tough. Peter, even, who we see, I think very rightly so, as the very best friend of Jesus, at least a very zealous and enthusiastic disciple of his, who says, well, I'll go anywhere with you, and I'd never abandon you, and I'd give my life for you. And Jesus stops him and says, before the cock crows, you're going to deny me three times, Peter. And all the rest of you as well. You will all end up abandoning me at some point. And we read about that in Mark chapter 14 and verse 15. And even though they all had bravado back in verse 31, they were arguing. We would never leave you. We would never abandon you. They all still ended up abandoning him. When the heat was turned on, they all ran away. So what was it about Judas that drove him to go a step beyond abandoning, beyond just denying, and actively, consciously betraying Jesus? In other words, from the title of the lesson, Judas, how could you? So was it his fate? Maybe that's the first question we need to ask. Was he just fated to do this? Was he destined? Was it inevitable that he was going to end up betraying Jesus? Because there are some passages that you read about Judas that sure make it seem like it was inevitable that this was what was going to happen. Now remember that Judas, like the other disciples, was handpicked by Jesus. Jesus knew exactly who he was getting when he selected his disciples. There was no surprises along the way. When Peter showed his zeal, complimented, of course, with sticking his foot in his mouth all the time, Jesus didn't suddenly realize, like, wow, Peter, I didn't realize you'd be like that. When John showed what he was made of, when Thomas showed what he was made of, when Philip and Andrew, Jesus knew exactly what he was getting when he selected his disciples. So Judas was not a surprise to him. Go to John chapter 6. And notice here in John chapter 6, the way that it's described here. And at the end of the chapter here, in verse 70, it says, Jesus answered them, saying, "Did I myself not choose you, the 12, and yet one of you is..." Notice he says there is, present tense. That's a detail maybe you might ignore if you were just going through the text pretty quickly. But here's Jesus, pretty early in his ministry, saying, present tense, one of you is a devil. Now, he meant Judas, the son of Simon Iscariot, for he, one of the 12, was going to betray him. And John, the apostle, of course, has the advantage of writing with 20/20 hindsight. He's able to write his gospel decades later, knowing exactly what was going to end up happening to Jesus. But the way that it's phrased there, did I not choose you, the 12? Did I not select you, hand pick you, and yet one of you is a devil? Now, this doesn't mean that Jesus caused Judas to go down this path. And this is an important point to make. When it comes to God and His foreknowledge and what God knows, foreknowledge does not equal causation. Foreknowledge does not equal causation. Just because Jesus might know what Judas is going to do one day doesn't mean he caused Judas to do that. In the same way that Jesus knew exactly what Peter was going to do, you will deny me three times. It is going to happen. And as for all the rest of you, you're going to abandon me too. You'll all run away like sheep without a shepherd. You will all abandon me before the end of this night. That doesn't mean he caused them to abandon him, but it does mean he knew that they would abandon him. God, in his foreknowledge, knows a great deal, but that doesn't mean he caused that to happen. So if we're going to lay the blame for Judas's sin at anybody's feet, it needs to start with Judas himself, who was the one who had to make the choice in the end. But the text in John chapter 12 gives us a little bit more information. We don't just place the blame at Judas's feet, we also can place some of the blame at the feet of the devil. In John chapter 12, it very clearly says that the devil had put the idea into Judas's mind. The devil had already planted the idea there. Now again, that doesn't mean that Judas lost any responsibility there. It doesn't mean that Judas could just go, "Oh, the devil made me do it." No. The devil might give you an idea, but the devil never makes you do it. The devil gave Adam and Eve an idea, or more specifically, Eve an idea, right? There was that fruit there, the fruit of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. Now, he never made Eve do anything. He didn't pin her down, give her a boa constrictor squeeze and stuff an apple in her mouth, or whatever fruit it happened to be. He didn't make her eat. But he was very persuasive in planting the idea in her mind. Has God really said? And I think it works the same way with Judas. Whatever Satan was telling Judas was very persuasive. He had planted the idea, but Judas bore the responsibility. God never can be blamed for sin, as James chapter 1 puts it. And I don't think that the devil has to be blamed entirely for sin also. We bear our responsibility, and yet with all that being said, we do have to give some blame to Satan. And there's an important point to make here, that when we read here in John chapter 12 that Satan had already given the idea to Judas, I think there's a great point there to be made about on his own, Judas could never have conceived of such evil. And I honestly think that on our own, man just by himself is not capable of conceiving of the incredible and horrible depravity that Satan is capable of conceiving. Remember the way Jesus described Satan earlier in the Gospel of John, that he's the father of lies, everything he says is a lie, he's been a liar and a murderer from the very beginning. Man cannot conceive of the incredible depths of depravity the same way that Satan can. And to betray the Son of God, I don't think Judas knew exactly what he was getting into. And the fact that Judas regretted what he did later and threw the silver back and said, I don't want to be a part of this anymore, take your silver, the way that he went and committed suicide later on in his extreme guilt, and it was not the right way to respond to that guilt, but the fact that he showed such a response indicates to me he didn't really understand just what exactly he was getting into here. He didn't understand. Mankind might do many evil things, but let's remember, Satan is the source of all evil. Not only that, but failure begins long before the fall. Judas's ultimate failure began many, many steps earlier in the process. He made many mistakes that led up to his ultimate demise. It might have been the devil's idea to sell Jesus to the authorities, but it was Judas's weakened moral state due to a life of one bad choice after another that made him susceptible to the temptation. Now, there's one anecdote here that we read about in the gospel stories here. In John chapter 12, verses 1 through 8. We'll read a couple of verses here just kind of by way of understanding here. In John chapter 12, beginning in verse 1, Jesus, therefore, 6 days before the Passover, came to Bethany where Lazarus was, whom he had raised from the dead. So they made him a supper there, and Martha was serving, and Lazarus was one of those reclining at the table. Now, verse 3, Mary, the sister of Lazarus and Martha, therefore took a pound of very costly perfume of pure nard and anointed the feet of Jesus and wiped his feet with her hair, and the house was filled with the fragrance of the perfume. But Judas Iscariot, one of the disciples who was intending to betray him, and I like this, according to John's take on it, which I believe is correct in that John was inspired, this had already been happening for some time. Even back in John chapter 12, Judas was already, you know, the gears were starting to turn. He was already starting to think about this. It says in verse 4, who was already intending to betray him said, why was this perfume not sold for 300 denarii and given to the poor people? Now he said this not because he was concerned about the poor, but because he was a thief, and as he had the money box, he used to pilfer what was put into it. And that seems like it's presented as a regular occurrence. That it wasn't a one-time thing where maybe he was in debt and borrowed from the money box, but that this was a constant, like, skimming off the top that Judas was doing. Pocketing a little bit here, and pocketing a little bit there, and just sort of skimming off the top. That Judas is a greedy and envious and dishonest person is clear from this anecdote, from this story. Now, this is just one example. Just one example of many. So to me, it's no surprise that it was silver that ended up winning him over. If anything's going to win Judas over, it was silver. And Jesus knew his heart when he first selected him, just like we already read in John chapter 6 and verse 70. Jesus knew exactly who Judas was. I suspect then that when Jesus picked Judas to be a disciple, he already had a background of stealing, or of dishonesty, or of greed, or of covetousness. And Jesus knew that that was already in his heart. And 3.5 years later, that covetousness and greed had festered and festered and festered for so long that eventually it was going to blow up in the form of betrayal for 30 pieces of silver. So I have a practical application real quick then is, what sort of foundation are you laying right now in your life? Because you might not be able to look 10 years down the road or 20 years down the road and know with any precision something that's going to trip you up later on. But what are you doing right now that's laying the foundation for that failure 20 years down the road? What are you doing right now in your marriage, right? you can't pinpoint and say, 20 years down the road, I'm going to have an affair with somebody. Maybe you can't pinpoint or, you know, put something on a calendar and say, I think in 20 years or 10 years or next September, I'm going to have an affair with somebody. But what are you doing right now that's setting you up for that failure later on? What glances are you stealing from coworkers? What are you looking at right now on your phone, your computer, your private life, your Instagram account? What are you doing right now to close off your spouse, emotionally speaking, that is laying the foundation for a failure later on? How are you handling money right now, for example? How are you handling money right now so that maybe you're not deep in debt and going to commit some kind of tax fraud tomorrow? But what are you doing right now that's going to put that temptation in front of you in 5 years? When you're $150,000 in debt and there's an easy way out of that all you have to do is compromise, sin, defraud somebody, what are you doing right now that's setting you up for that failure later on? Judas was a greedy man. And Judas was dishonest. And he was covetous. And he was willing to pilfer from Jesus' own money box. So is it any surprise that for 30 pieces of silver, he would sell Jesus to the chief priests? He laid the foundation for his failure long before it happened. It's hard to imagine such sin coexisting with the many wonders that Judas witnessed in his ministry. And the Gospels are filled with examples of wonders that Judas must have seen firsthand. Things that he saw with his own eyes. Men who could not walk one moment and could suddenly jump up and walk the next. People who were blind one moment and could see the very next. People who were racked and suffering because of demon possession. And a moment later, were of a right mind and sound body, living and acting normally. Think of all of the things that he must have witnessed. But I'll make it even worse. Not just things that Judas witnessed Jesus doing, but miracles that he himself must have been performing. Judas performing miracles, you say? Yes. Go to Matthew chapter 10 and verse 1 and notice here. In Matthew chapter 10 verse 1. And having summoned his 12, right? Count them 12, all 12. And having summoned his 12 disciples, he gave them... He gave some of them, most of them, 11 of them, excluded Judas. No, he gave them, 12 disciples, authority over unclean spirits to cast them out and to heal every kind of disease and every kind of sickness. Couple that with the examples of Luke 9, verse 1, and verse 6, and verse 10 as a parallel passage to that. And I would say, with certainty, Judas Iscariot was able to miraculously heal people. Judas Iscariot, the future betrayer of Jesus, had miraculous abilities just like Peter, James, John, and even the Son of God. Judas not only witnessed miracles, Judas performed miracles. Truly, he had no excuse in terms of the evidence. Somebody who witnessed all that firsthand but could still go and betray Jesus, it still leaves you wondering, Judas, how could you? With everything at your disposal, how could you? All the things that you did and all the things that you witnessed and all the things that you saw, and in the end, it was just worth 30 pieces of silver to you. Judas, how could you? Well, let's get into a bit of explanation then. The most tragic part of the story of Judas is that it was never too late for him until he made it too late. It was never too late until he made it too late. Jesus didn't seal his fate. Even when Jesus looked at him at that supper and said, "The one who dips the morsel in the bowl with me, that's the one who's going to betray me." And then it was Judas who dipped the morsel in the bowl, and Jesus looked right at him and said, "I guess it's time for you to get going. And what you do, you go do quickly. That didn't seal his fate. Even that didn't seal his fate. Taking the money didn't seal his fate. Kissing Jesus didn't seal his fate. Weeping did not seal his fate. His incredible grief and his remorse and his pain, that did not seal his fate, because up to the very moment that he wrapped the noose around his neck, he could have repented and got up the next day. He and Peter would have had a lot to weep about together. But the story of Judas would have been very different. His fate was not sealed until he sealed it. And that's an important thing to think about then in practical terms. You're never too far gone. You, sinner, you, Christian, who's fallen away, you with the secret sin, the thing that you're ashamed of, that you don't want to share with anybody else because you don't want people to know, you don't know how they'll feel about you, look at you differently, you are never too far gone for God. You are never too far gone for God until you make yourself too far gone like Judas did. Judas's fate wasn't sealed until he sealed it himself. Wrapped that noose around his neck. He had friends who would have rallied around him. You know that. He had regret. He had all the things that were necessary for coming back to God in repentance. Judas might have been destined to betray Jesus in a certain way, but that doesn't mean that he was destined for hell. And in John chapter 13, notice something here. Going back to our original text in John 13, let's pick up again here in verse 7. Okay? Jesus answered and said here, "What I do to you, you do not realize now, but you'll understand hereafter." And Peter said to him, "Never shall you wash my feet." But Simon answered, "If I do not wash you, you have no part with me." Simon said to him, "Then, Lord, do not wash my feet only, but wash my hands and my head." And Jesus said to him in verse 10, "He who has bathed needs only to wash his feet, but is completely clean. And you are clean, but not all of you." For he knew the one who was betraying him. For this reason, he said, "Not all of you are clean." Now, that looks like an accusation, doesn't it? And I guess you could interpret it as an accusation. But I'm a little more optimistic than that. Rather than seeing it as an accusation, I believe this is an invitation to Judas, directed right at Judas. He's washing disciples' feet and talking about being clean from sins. "And if I wash you, you are clean." And then he turns right to Judas and says, "But not all of you are clean." Now, what does that mean? It means if you want to be, you can be. It means you're not clean right now, but I am promising you, assuring you, inviting you, asking you, "Will you not be clean by me? I have the power to clean. I have the power to wash. I have the power to save. Judas, not all of you are clean right now. And you don't have to be filthy." And I believe that's an invitation to Judas so that he could wake up the next day and not hang himself, but wake up the next day and come back to God and be as clean as God has asked him to be. What an invitation also. What an invitation. So Judas, how could you? How could you betray Jesus when he's done so much and shown so much and invited you to be a part of the cleansing that he offers so freely? Well, I'll give you some explanations. Now, these are a bit speculative, just speculating. Not because I believe that we need to shove some interpretation on the text. I'm doing this for practical application. Because maybe one or all of these explanations doesn't fully explain Judas, but maybe it explains you. Maybe it explains you in the way you've betrayed Jesus. And if we can see a little bit of ourselves in Judas, then we can learn something from him. Yes, even Judas, the one who betrayed Jesus and hanged himself because he had no hope anymore. Well, the first and simplest explanation of why Judas did it was because money talks. That's a simple one. Judas was a greedy man, and 30 pieces of silver is a lot of money. And maybe it was no more complicated than that. Maybe there's nothing more to it than that, that money talks. After all, why do people prostitute themselves? Because money talks. Why do people traffic women and children? Because money talks. Why do people cheat? Why do they rob? Why do they deal? Why do they push? Why do they gamble? Because money talks. And 1 Timothy chapter 6 very clearly says that because of the love of money, many people's lives have been ruined and many souls have been lost. So, maybe that's just the simplest explanation of Judas is money talks. But I think there's more to it than that. I don't think it was just about the money. Because his immediate grief afterward indicates to me that Judas was a deeper man than just being a covetous money grubber. The fact that when he realizes what they're going to do to Jesus, they're not just going to beat him up and send him away. Maybe that's what he thought at first. I'll make a little scratch on the side. Jesus will get beaten up a little bit and he'll go away a little wiser. Won't come back to the Passover next year. He'll learn his lesson and we'll all move on together. Maybe that's what he thought. But when he realized just how deep he was into this thing, when he realized it was blood they were after, death, crucifixion, he threw that money back and said, I don't want any part of this. That to me shows there was something more going on with Judas. Think about his name, Judas. It's a derivation of Judah. The most patriotic name that you could possibly think of in the first century. You know, in the first century, Judas would have been like naming your child George Washington Goodwin, right? An incredibly patriotic sort of name. Judas, obviously, it's a derivation of one of the tribes of Israel. It's the name of their homeland, Judea. It's also the name of some of their greatest leaders, their great heroes. Judas Maccabee, for example. Now, only just a few generations earlier seemed to be just all that and a bag of chips. Judas was a very patriotic man, so it's possible that he was raised in a very patriotic household where his parents believed in the coming Messiah, that they believed the Messiah would remove Rome from the land, defeat their Roman overlords, and bring Judah back to a time of incredible spiritual, religious, and political prosperity. And then when Jesus just turns out to be like, you mean he's not going to be a king? Like a Julius Caesar type, or like an Alexander the Great, or like a King David? You mean he's just like a regular guy wearing regular clothes, preaching to dirt poor nobodies in Galilee? Expectation did not match reality for Judas then. And maybe he spent his whole life expecting the Messiah to be something that the Messiah just wasn't. And in his disappointment, he thought, at least I can recoup some of my losses and make a little money off of this Jesus of Nazareth guy. He's wasted the last 3.5 years after all. Maybe I can get something out of this. Maybe he was disgusted with himself for being the kind of hypocrite that Jesus frequently preached about. Because on more than one occasion, Jesus talked about the fakes and the hypocrites and the people just living for this life, storing up treasures on earth where moth and rust destroy and thieves break in and steal. And he was thinking about himself the whole time because I am that person. I'm no better than the Pharisees, the hypocrites, the whitewashed tombs full of dead men's bones, clean on the outside and filthy on the inside. I'm no better than the Pharisees. And maybe after 3.5 years of listening to Jesus harp on him, Judas just got tired of it. Tired of feeling bad about himself, tired of self-loathing, tired of constantly feeling like he needed to make changes to his life, tired of not measuring up with the expectation and the will that Jesus has set up in his ministry. Just tired of it. And you know, some people just get tired of it. They get tired of feeling bad about themselves. They get tired of hating themselves. So instead of changing the right thing, as in their attitudes and behaviors, they lash out at the people who are telling them to change. Instead of changing their behavior, they lash out at the elders for being too strict and always getting on top of me about things. They lash out at preachers for constantly moralizing all the time. They lash out at parents for too many rules and too many regulations. They lash out at police officers and government officials and the president. And instead of making the changes that need to be changed internally in their own lives, it's just easier to blame somebody else and lash out at them. And I'll tell you what. When we are self-loathing, when we hate who we are and we're constantly reminded of how much we hate who we are by somebody else, we will do some very strange things. And when you hate who you are, you might even betray the Son of God for 30 pieces of silver. I don't think Judas liked himself very much. And when he finally had the last straw and couldn't take it anymore, given a life of hypocrisy and covetousness, and the last straw was, I cannot live with what I've done to Jesus, he took the easy way out again. Just as he had probably always done before. I don't know if that's why Judas killed himself. I don't know if that's why Judas betrayed him. We're just not given a ton of information. But I will tell you this, that the example of Peter is a constant reminder that Judas' life could have turned out very different. They both betrayed Jesus, didn't they? Now, Judas got more money out of it, but in a sense, didn't they both betray Jesus? They both abandoned Jesus. They both betrayed him. But when the sun came up the next day, one of them was dead, and one of them had the sunshine on his face, ready to pick up the pieces and move on. It was never too late for Judas, and it's never too late for you. Jesus offered Judas the same cleansing that he offered Peter. If I make you clean, you really are clean. And he offers the same invitation to you now. He who believes and is baptized shall be saved. It really is as simple as that. So whatever spiritual needs you might have, please let it be known by coming forward as we stand and sing.